to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Well, good evening and welcome to Breaking the Silence. Look at this awesome sunset right behind me from the most beautiful city in the world. That is the sunset over the Texas Medical Center here in Houston, Texas. Is that not just beautiful? Welcome to Palm Sunday, and we're getting ready to kind of celebrate as we go into the Passion Week of our risen Lord and Savior. So just welcome to a wonderful week. And I love spring, and this is really going to just be a beautiful week. Inspirational-wise, I think we're due for a lot of rain. But, hey, we can deal with rain just as long as it's not flooding. Welcome to the program tonight. We are trying to make sure we get our guests up and running tonight. So we're just going to kind of make sure everything's ready to go before we go. If not, we already have an archive show ready to roll. And we'll just say, hey, thanks for being with us tonight and move on. But I want to let you know about some things. Next week, Easter Sunday night, it is the first Sunday in a month of Child Abuse Awareness Month. And I'm trying to do something a little bit different. Instead of doing a trauma-related program, I have asked three of my friends in an old youth group that I was the youth director of way back years and years and years ago, probably 35 years. We'll talk about more of that later. But James Brown, his twin brother Matt Brown, and Amy Parks from Southern Illinois will be here next Sunday night. And we're just going to have a good time sitting back, laughing, joking, talking. But we're going to be kind of discussing what was it like as a youth in your day? What was important to you? What helped you get through what you was going through? And now as a parent, what do you think is important for us to be able to pass on to those generations that's coming ahead? I think it's going to be a fun show. I think it's going to be an informative show. And I just hope you allow, appreciate you allowing me the opportunity just to kind of let my hair down and have a good time as we go into the month of April. The ones we have coming up after that, following that, is Barbara Jo Hansen. She's going to be on April 11th. And it is just a great, she's a great author, a great advocate for trauma. And we're going to be dealing with that on April 11th. But next week, James and Matt Brown and Amy Parks right here live. I need to have somebody's thumb up if we have our guest tonight on the program. I see.
Amu.
You're here. Okay, wonderful. I can't see you yet, but I hope we can get that worked out. If not, we're just going to get you on the audio, but I would love to be able to get the video.
It's coming up now, Pop.
Okay, but why it's coming up, and we'll let him get his picture going. Hey, David, I'm going to give you the introduction. In 1953, in Jonesboro, Arkansas, a baby born boy was born dead. And the attending physician set that little body aside and tended to the health of the mother for 18 minutes. Now, more than 60 plus years later, that baby boy is now a grown man. He's with us tonight, and he has written an unbelievable, inspirational book that I recommend everybody to buy, download, get on his webpage and look. It's called The Boy Born Dead by an internationally known speaker, David Ring. I also want to welcome Curtis in tonight, my son. It was his idea to ask David to come in tonight. David, it's my understanding, first of all, welcome to the program this evening.
Thank you, Doctor. Yeah, joy to be with you.
Fantastic. You, David, because of those 18 minutes, you had some physical complications because of the lack of oxygen to your brain. Is that the way I understand your story, David?
Yes. When I was coming out of the birthing canal, my oxygen was cut off of my brain. So when I came out and I was born dead, blue baby, stillborn baby, and being born in 1953 in Jonesboro, Arkansas, they did not have the team like we do now. They did not have the technology that they do now. And they literally, Greg, laid my body on a table against the wall to save my mom's life. And that's why I was on the table alone. 18 minutes is a long time. But thank God it's not over until God says it's over.
It is, I tell you. I want to encourage everyone to just literally go on YouTube and type in David Ring, R-I-N-G. I spent all day yesterday while I was filling 2,000 Easter eggs for our Easter egg hunt next week. I just put it on and let it play. And I tell you, David, the churches that you were in, the organizations that you spoke in front of, the crowds, the audiences, and then the I Am Second video absolutely, it gives me goosebumps right now. Everybody, tell me how that came about, and then I really want to get into what you want to share in these few moments with our worldwide audience tonight, David.
Well, you know, like, networking, I was always preaching, and my first opportunity on the main stage in 1978, I was a speaker at the Southern Baptist Commission in Atlanta, and 22,000 preachers were there. And my phone blew up, my mail, I got invitation ever since then, 78. And then 1986, I was back on the Southern Baptist Commission. But 1989, Dr. Farwell, Joey Farwell, Dr. Joey Farwell, from Lynchburg, Virginia, he invited me up. He did not know me. I knew of him, but we never met. And all I can say, September 10th, 1989, God sat down on Thomas Road Baptist Church. And Dr. Farwell and I connected on stage. The chemistry was A-OK. And from that moment on, Dr. Falwell, a month later, October 2nd, Dr. Falwell wanted to play me live on TV nationwide. And of course, I said, you can. And he said, we're going to sell videos. And they did. And the second week after October 2nd, they had so many response. They wanted to do it again. So they called all the TV stations. Back then, if you remember, we did not have the cable that we do now. We only had three stations, ABC, NBC, and CBS. And from 9 to 10, Falwell bought an hour on each station. And he played me for 8 solid weeks. I mean, the same message, the same program. And when you were on TV back then, it was bigger than life. And the first time he played me, I got 38 speaking engagements in one night. And it blew me away. And then Dr. John Hayes, he found out about me. Again, he did not know me, but he invited me. And that morning, John and I connected on stage, which is a big deal, because about 4,000 people at 8:30 and at 11 saw the love of John to me. And he told me later, that's funny, he told me, I've been with John probably 21 times. But the second or third time, I said, David, when you came into my office at 8 o'clock for the 8:30, I knew you had sweet policies, but nobody told me you have a speech impediment. And when you opened your mouth that morning in my office, he told me later, he said, good, now what am I going to do now? Because I'm going to turn the boy loose on stage, but nobody can understand me. But you know the power of God. The moment I took to the pulpit, John, you know, about 5 minutes later, John really got into what I was saying. And I don't mind to say this. God allowed me to be born with a speech impediment. God allowed me to be born with cerebral palsy, with a speech impediment, because people have to really listen to what I say. And that morning at Cornerstone, the people engaged with me, and John invited me back. But I was with Falwell 18 times, and then the year 2000, Dr. Dobson, somebody sent him the package of the Founder Week up in Chicago for that year, and I was in the album, the cassette tapes, and it was walking out the door and grabbed one of the tape when he was going to the gym and walk on the treadmill, and it popped me in, and easy of the story. My mom was blown away, and the adoption staff made contact with my staff, and I think the adoption played me about 4 or 5 times since the year 2000. He invited me by chapel, by all staff chapel, 1,500 people. And Dr. Greg is probably second to none with my best engagement live. I mean, wow. The people were absolutely standing to their feet and giving God the praise over what God done in my life. So,
man, unbelievable. David, I was watching you in at Thomas Rhodes Baptist Church on YouTube, and I think it was cut up into two pieces. So it's like a 40-minute message.
Yeah.
When you kicked off your shoe on the sermon called The Suit, I stood up and was like, oh, this is awesome. And I almost wanted to applaud. And then when you took your coat off, it's like, oh, my lands, this is brilliant. And you had everybody on the edge of their seat like this, wanting to see. And the altar was full, David. God worked through you in a miraculous way.
We had over 2,000 people that night, not Sunday morning, but Sunday night. And what's so funny, Falwell did not have a clue what I was about to do. So after I watched the video over and over, I was watching Falwell. I said, what in the world is he doing?
Yeah.
But, after I got the shoe off, the coat off, everybody was engaged, not only doing what I was doing, but they said, man, it's not what you are on the outside, it's everything. You are on the inside, and we had over 1,000 people at the altar that night. I mean, men, women, young people, they I call it the old-fashioned Sunday night meeting.
Yeah.
And Dr. Falwell loved that message.
Yeah. You can tell on his face at first, uh-oh, what's this guy doing? And then all of a sudden, he kind of leaned back like, oh, this is good.
It was good.
I liked it. Hey, I'll tell you what, Dave, we're going to take our first commercial break.
Okay.
But what I want to do is I want to kind of let you know what we're going to ask you on the other side of this. And Curtis, I'll let you do it. But I want to find out about, we know about your birth now, but about that stage in your life when you lost your mom and dad. And Curtis, when we come back, I'll let you kind of introduce yourself too, because you've been talking to him on the phone too, and we'll let you premiere that one. But we're going to talk about that on the other side of this, about a minute commercial break. So we'll be right back with you, David, okay?
Okay.
We'll be right back. Don't leave us. After this commercial break, we'll be back for another segment with the awesome David Ring here on Breaking the Silence. Be right back. Finally coming very soon will be the release of my second book in the 3-part trilogy, Overcoming the Darkness, The Roadmap to Hope. Now, this book will be an in-depth look at the many different facets and emotions that a person goes through when they're experiencing anxiety and trauma in their life, and they're simply searching for hope. And an exciting addition to this book will be a companion journal guide that will come along with it. Also, there's going to be something that I'm very excited about, the youth version of this book called When Dark Clouds Come, The Roadmap to Hope. And it's going to be an excellent tool and guide for teenagers dealing with stress in their lives. So stay tuned for the release date coming very, very soon for these exciting new resources. Now back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams on the VBS Radio Network. All right, welcome back. I don't know about you, David, but I'm just having a good time tonight.
Good time.
I think when you get believers in the same room and you're just talking about how good God is, can't help but find joy in that. Curtis, my son is right here with us, David. It was his idea. He called me one day and he said, "Have you heard of David Ring?" I said, "Yeah." And we thought about you when you sang What a Day That Will Be with Bill and Gloria Gaither in the homecoming crowd.
Oh, I love that. I mean, that's David, I have followed a lot of your career, but that video, when you told your little life story leading up to that song, because that's my favorite gospel song of all time.
Yeah.
That just, oh, I have not forgotten that video. And I've watched, oh, that was 6-7 years ago. And I still remember it. I still come through YouTube every once in a while. I watch it just to brighten my day up a little bit, Mr. Rain. So thank you for being on the show tonight.
Thank you, Coach.
So, tell us about your trauma with losing both your mom and dad at such a young age, David.
Well, being born with cerebral palsy, my mom took kill of me. My dad, at the age of 11, he got sick. 2 weeks later, he died with cancer of the liver, which he was a baby preacher too. And but my mom covered me, assured me that everything is going to be okay. And I tell people all over the audience today, all over the United States, I'm not only the baby of eight, but I'm a number one mom and baby boy. And by looking at me with the mom and baby face, you know, I have a face that only my mom can love. And my mom loved me, my mom done everything for me. And I did not know that I had cerebral palsy until my mama died. And one day in my life, at the age of 14, my mom got sick. She went in the hospital. 2 months later, my mama, the doctor came to my family and said, "Your mama will never come home again." And being a 14-year-old boy and being a mama boy and believe everything mama told me, I said, "That's not true. That's not true." Because my mama told me every day, "David, I will never abandon you. I will never leave you. I will always be there for you. I will always defend you. You can always count on my mama. My mama is not going to die." But October 16th, 1968, she drew a last breath. And when my mama died, everything I believe in died. My mama loved me, but my mama lied to me at the same time. My mama told me, "I will never abandon you," but she did the ultimate abandonment. She died on me. She said, "I will always take care of you. I will always defend you." But when she died, I went back to school and people made fun of me And he said, look, that boy walked for the look, that boy talked for the look. That boy can do anything. And I could not come home to my mama anymore. And I could not say, mama, somebody made fun of me today. She could not put her arm around me and make it all better. So every night, I would lay in bed crying my eyes out. And all I wanted to do is die. I remember playing on the Interstate 70, go through St. Louis. I was living in St. Louis. I remember going out in the highway begging a semi truck to hit me because the pain I'm going through now on the inside will never be the pain. I try every other day to kill myself because I thought I was done. I thought I was over. I did not want to wake up in the morning. And when my mama died, I died, and I moved to live with my sister. My sister, they were four girls and four boys in my family. And the sister that took me in, she molested me for 2 years. And she built me a room in the basement, and I can't believe, and I'm going to be honest with you, I cannot believe that is a part of my story. I can't believe how anybody can let somebody, and my sister, a sibling, a biological sibling, knew the emotion, knew the pain I was going through. I was 14, but mentally, I probably was about 11. My sister took advantage of me. And with everything going on, Kurt, I don't have nothing going for me, so why don't I die? And I attempted suicide. But thank God one night I went away from the house, walked up to the hill, found a church. They were having a revival. And I said, I'm not going in because God don't love me. God don't love me. I know John 3:16, for God so loved the world. God loved everybody but me. If God loved me, what about my pain? If God loved me, what about my mama's death? If God loved me, why did my daddy die? If God loved me, why? And everybody who is listening to me now, been through the same one question. They feel all alone. And I feel like I was alone. But that night, I gave my life to the Lord Jesus. And he changed my life forever.
In that story, how did you deal with the pain and the trauma of your mom and dad, then being, I think, moved to several different homes until somebody finally took you, your sister, then being molested for 2 years during that process by your sister? How did you deal with that emotionally, David, before you found the Lord? How was you dealing with it besides just suicidal? Tell me some of the thoughts that go through your mind.
I'm lonely. lonely nuns getting killed somebody. And I lost all hope in life. And I was in a dark, dark hole. And I begged God, don't let me wake up in the morning. And the emotional, what I went through, losing my mom was enough. I mean, that will kill anybody by itself. But when I moved to my sister, I was very lonely. And I wanted to die. She took me in. And every time she molested me, Greg, she said, David, I'm the only one that loves you. Mama gone. My sister, 2 years older than me, I mean, we like twins. She done everything for me. My sister did. My sister, 2 years older than me, but she went to live her own life. Therefore, I did not lose only a mom. I lost my best friend, 2 years older than me, and the sister that molested me, a 14-year older than me. And Greg, I mean, I lost my mom and my sister, 2 years older than me, all in the same day. And it was too much to bear. And only by the grace of God, I mean, there's sound preaching a little bit, but God had a bigger plan for me. And now I've been saved for over 50 years. I kind of laugh with me talking to God. I say, God, you knew how lonely I was. You knew how I wanted to die. Why didn't you let me in on the back of the screen? Why did you let me know what your plan was? And the guy did not know that. I mean, he did not tell me that. But somebody told me once in church, after I spoke, somebody came up to me and said, David, God was in the womb every time you were molested. And God saying, I love you. I love you. In the corner of the womb. And now I know if God now in the corner of the womb, no telling what I would have done. But knowing that God does love me, knowing that Satan meant for evil, God meant for good, even with sweet policy, God meant, the devil meant for evil, God meant for good. Mama dead, the devil meant for evil. If I can only take away his mom, I'm going to destroy the boy. And dad the same way. But the devil meant for evil, God meant for good, and the molestation and Greg, I'll be very, very authentic with you tonight. It has taken me years to walk through that. And I'm not out of the woods yet. And I know I got victory over that. I know I'm going to be okay. I know God will use it until the day I die. We throw away broken things. We throw away broken things, but God don't. God uses broken things. And when I started telling my story about being molested in 2012, I didn't tell anybody from 68 to 2012. I'm the only one known, my sister known. I'm the only one known. When I started telling people from stage I've been molested, somebody always come up to me in the lobby of the church in the foyer and whisper, "Thank you for giving me freedom tonight. Thank you for letting me know that I was molested too." Wow. But everything will be okay.
David, you said you held this in from 1968 all the way up. And I'm going to go ahead and tell our producer, I'm not taking a commercial break, another one. We're just going to go right on through because I want to stick with this. This is so important. We're just going to ride this all the way to the end. David, what happened that urged you to finally say, "Hey, this happened to me"? And what kind of situation was that in? And what kind of healing have you had since telling it? Because you were silent for years.
I did not tell anybody. Because every time my kids molest me 3-4 times a week, she said, "David, nobody love you. I'm the only one in the family. Love you. I gave you a home. You eat every day. You got good food, good home. But if you tell somebody, I got to kick you out on the street." And the moment you tell somebody, you are out on the curb and nobody will ever come by and pick you up. And when you've been told every single day for 2 years that I'm going to be kicked out in the street, I didn't tell anybody. In 2012, when I watched, like we all did, on TV about the Penn State assistant coach, Joey Chendinsky, we'd seen that on TV every noon on TV about Joey Chendinsky. Molested the little boys in the shower. And my wife and I got married in 81. And 30 years before that, and one night I broke down, I was bawling like a baby on my couch. And she said, "What's wrong with you?" I said, "Turn off the TV. I got something to tell you." And when she did, I sat down and I said, "I know you're not going to understand this, but that's okay. But I was molested." And she had an idea I was molested, but by my brother-in-law. I said, "No, and my sister." And I said, "I will tell you anything you want to know, I will go into detail if you want to know that, because you are my wife. And she'd say, David, why didn't you tell me that on the first date? That's so important to me, David. I'd say, I tell you, I didn't tell you because I was so afraid that you were going to kick me out. And it's still in my brain. But after I told my wife, we went to a child home, one of my children, two of my children. And they said, what are you doing out so late? I said, I got something to tell you. And I said, I'm molested. I was molested. And I did not tell your mom. I did not tell you. But now I feel like I need to tell you and the family everything. And Greg, that was a release of the tension in my life. That told me in my life, it's okay. They gonna love me who I am. Number what I've been through. And being born with cerebral palsy, I can tell you, if I want sympathy, my wife will be the last one I would tell about wanting sympathy, because she lived with me for 38 years, 39 years, and she don't come to me with your sympathy story. But yet in 2012, I wanted to write the book, The Boy Born Dead, because my story never been told from my stage. I told my story. I've been in over 8,000 surgeries. Over 8,000. And before 2012, nobody knew about my molestation. And the moment I told my wife and children, I started little by little, not all the way, little by little, that I was molested. And like I said earlier, when I do say that from the stage of inner church, of inner denomination, of inner church, big, small, inner church, some men come up to me at the table and say, thank you for telling me about the molestation, because my uncle done it to me, my aunt, you know, and you know this, I'm not a pastor, I'm an evangelist. I travel every week telling my story, but you know, every time you preach, even today, you are talking to somebody that either been there or there now, and they're trying to find hope. The main question they are asking, all I want to know, it's okay. And somebody does love me. And it'd be a wonderful thing. I'll be honest with you. I can't believe that a part of my story. But yet I cannot change the past. But I can change my attitude about the patch.
Right.
And I gave it to God, and He is working in me. You know, again, I'm an old-fashioned preacher, so to speak. I believe in giving an invitation. I believe in giving an altar call. But being molested for 2 years, it's not something you come to the altar and get over it in 5 minutes. I got faithfully, but it's a day-by-day thing.
Yeah. David, when you went to that church that night, that was a life-changing moment for you. And it was an unbelievable life-changing moment.
Yeah.
I think he was, what, 16 years old?
Yeah.
So you went to the church. Tell me the difference from the young man that walked into the church that night to the young man that walked out.
I remember it so vividly. The pastor's son, David Whiteman, took me in, loved me, and he encouraged me from the time we met, 1969, and 9 months later, I came to the altar because David, every time David saw me in school, he gave me an encouraging one. Don't give up. Everything's going to be okay. And when I got saved, the people came alive. They did not know my story. My pastor, Don Wildman, 92-year-old, loved the guy, loved the guy. And he a loving guy, and he loved me. But that night, Greg, he's done something that he needs to do for me. He called, there were about 85 people, 95 people in the auditorium. And he called everybody down at the altar to surround me and lay hands on me. And by doing that, they were telling me, David, you have a home. We love you. We accept you. And we want to be your number one church that you come to. And everybody loved on me that night. And when I walked out the door that night, oh, Greg, it's just like flipping up on a light switch. When the Bible said, when somebody gets saved, they take away the old things and give you new things. It took away my loneliness. It took away my sorrow. It gave me love. It gave me peace. And it gave me happiness. And if it were not for the body of Christ in the life of that church, and nobody knows the name of the church, but I do. And they begun a work in me that gave me, hey, I'm not okay, but that's okay. God loved me anyway. Yeah. And I'm at school, a public school, and they could not put me in special education because I was too smart for them. And after I got changed, the school took notice. And they were dumbfounded by my attitude. And they had to call together an art school assembly. And when we to stand on stage with a student body of 1,400 students. And I said to the student body, I want to raise revival, gave my life to God. I don't understand that. But I do understand today. I don't want to die anymore. I want to live. I have something worth living for. And the school folded me to be the most popular boy in the old school. And think about it, Greg. I went from a zero to King David overnight.
Wow.
And they voted me to be minister to school spirits. I am the vice president of my class, the football, basketball, and track manager of the year. When I started laughing at myself, it calmed down the student body and said, man, it's not a downer, it's up. And I became popular.
That's great. We only have a couple minutes left. Curtis has one last question for you. Curtis, go ahead and ask the last question, and then we're going to have to wind down. We got about a minute or two left, David. Curtis,
so David, a big portion of our show is we are a show of hope. So what would you say to others that are in need of hope tonight?
The hope I tell them, it's not over until God sees it over. And people who want hope, they need to know everything will be okay at the end of the day. And hope, faith, it's something unseen. They cannot see. A student body voted me to be the monk. But I hope when that church loved me, they put so much hope in my life. And I said, if God gave me hope, if God can give me hope through the hell I've been through. I mean, I've been through hell and back many times. And I thought it was over, but it's not over until God says it's over.
Wow. I tell you what, David, thank you so very much for taking the time out of your Sunday evening. I know you've had a long drive tonight. You've been in Alabama, heading back to Nashville, speaking. Just one of your hundreds and hundreds of churches that you speak in every year. Thank you for spending some time with Curtis and I tonight and our listening audience. This has been a blessing. And one thing I want to do, I want to put a little bird in your ear to see, remember that church in Houston, because we're going to call you and have you come up and do some speaking engagements for us. We would love to hear you.
They can go to my website, davidwing.org, and I'm proud to say I will go to any church, big or small. I spent 4 days in a revival last week, and we only average about 80. But God is taking me back and say, hey, David, don't forget those small churches. Mm-hmm. That's who you got to study. So if anybody wants to come to their church, go to my website, and it's going to blow you away, Greg.
Yeah.
I don't have a fee to I don't have a fee. I come on a love offering. And whatever the people give, that's what I get. And that's what we've been living on for 48 years. So if anybody wants to, for me to come, just fill out the form online, Book David, and we will be in touch with them.
That's wonderful, David. I tell you what, I want to give you that website again. It's davidring.org. Get the book, The Boy Born Dead. Get on his website and just look at everything that has happened in this man's life. Get on YouTube and download those videos and watch them. And your life will be changed. And just forward those on and tell more people about it. David, thank you for being with us. Curtis, do you have a last thought for David before we close out tonight?
It was such a pleasure, sir. Just talking to you on the phone, emailing back and forth from this show. It is an absolute honor of my life to have a conversation with you tonight, Mr. Ring.
Thank you. And Curtis, you saved the day. I mean, I did not know how to get online, and you called me in about 1-2 the show started, and I'm an idiot when it comes to technology.
Well, but you look great tonight, David. You did awesome tonight. Everybody got to see you, and that's what I was hoping for. But most importantly, they got to hear your message. And thank you for being with us from the bottom of my heart. I appreciate it. God bless.
You're welcome.
We always want to end the show each week like we always do. No matter what you're going through, this story tonight, David's story tonight, ought to show you no matter what has been handed to you on your life's plate, no matter what, there's always hope, folks. There's always hope. Join us right here next week for another edition of Breaking the Silence. And may you have an awesome Passion Week as we lead up to Easter Sunday. God bless. Thank you so much. Have an awesome night. We'll talk to you next week. Good night.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.